Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart, and this week I sit down with some longtime friends. Been friends with these guys for about 6 years. They've been, I would say, some of the most enjoyable, low maintenance, perfect, like just the best type of friendship. The guys from Smokin' and Toastin', Ian and Cruz host a show called Smokin' and Toastin' on RFC Media. It's a podcast. They cover spirits. They cover craft beer. They cover a little bit of everything. Very similar to this show, but they've been doing it longer and better than me for about 2 years longer than me. They're coming in on around episode 250. We're on episode 145, I think. So they've been a big inspiration to me for this show and just could not be better guys. So, yeah, this week we sit down, we talk about them, we talk about Smokin' and Toastin', we talk about, obviously, Prideful Goat, which has been big on the show lately, and we just catch up. So it was a great episode, a relaxed episode. A disagreement between friends takes place towards the end. Could not be a bigger fan of them. So without further ado, please welcome Smokin' and Toastin's hosts, Ian and Cruz. Cheers. Guys, I missed you. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having
me. Have you been on together?
Yes.
Yes.
Once. I remember
been on
once
separately and together. So,
well, on this show, we don't keep score like some jerks who have cigar lounge in Galveston.
I wonder who you've been talking about.
Those guys. Are
no one cares about that guy. I'm glad to have you guys on. I just kind of wanted to have a. You know, I'll sit down with guests. I'll go into it having to do a lot of homework, or you know, and then you get the sessions where it's you've got two genuine friends that you've known for many years now, and we can just enjoy each other. And I thought I would love to share a drink, especially during this pandemic, with friends.
Well, thank you. That's a kind invitation, and I want you to know that we appreciate being invited, but. You know, we're always cool about being a backup, like, you know, because I know you book a lot of guests, you know, out-of-town guests, actors, comedians, people like that, that you've had on the show, and it's been amazing. But I know that sometimes those are the kind of things that fall through at the last minute. So we always want you to feel free to call us if you need, you know, if you need to be bailed out for a guest for the show.
Cruz, that feels like an accusation.
Oh, no.
You guys are not backups. I love you guys.
We love that. I'd
rather be that first, second call.
Sure.
Yeah. What was the guy for the Washington football team this year that, like, was stocking shelves and then, like, 3 weeks later he was starting against the Buccaneers or something like that? Tyler Henneke or something like that.
Sure.
The guy's name. Yeah, he was like the most popular guy in football for a couple of weeks because he was the backup who was there who got it done.
Sure.
So that's how I see us. That's how I envision us. Now, I realize though, it could be a bit of a letdown. I mean, if last week was like a
William
major
H. Macy,
comedian,
right? Yeah.
Somebody really funny, you know, and this week it's us. So I did prepare a few jokes.
Oh, did you?
Just, you know, just.
This has got to be good.
I'm excited.
Just so. I didn't want it to be a lull, you know, from your last show.
Well, just. You better come correct because you start throwing jokes. You're the Specs voice guy. I got jokes. I got backup jokes. I mean, for those who don't know, Cruz here, if you've ever been inside a Specs anywhere in the state of Texas, all 200 plus locations, you hear Cruz's voice. Over, that's his RFC Media, right? I mean, that's
yeah. Well, and the reason it's me is apparently there have been studies done, And my voice drives people to drink more than almost anyone else.
I so can attest to that.
That's why I got hired for that
I was
gig.
Wondering my mouth was watering. Let's get a drink started here.
I'm with that.
I'm a huge fan of Sagamore. Couldn't have, the guy that started the brand, I think founded Under Armour. I mean, this guy really has done some things in his life.
Yeah.
Cash Strength Rye, Sagamore Spirit. I believe they've been on your show at one point.
Sagamore has, yes.
Yeah. So I thought we can get started with a little heavy, get into the jokes and see where
something
this goes.
A little heavy. You and Ian are like, you're like soulmates, peas in a pod. Starting with the heaviest.
Well, why start on the light side, right?
You know, usually when I bring in the beers for our show, you know, we start with a blonde ale or a pilsner or something light, and then, you know, the second beer will be maybe like an IPA, and then finally something larger. When Ian brings the beers, we start at like 11.8%. So,
but that's okay because it goes up from there.
Exactly.
You know, I don't want to start on the lighter side.
As long as it escalates. So this is what the Sagamore
Cash Strength.
You were mentioning the voice of Specs, and it's so funny because I remember this has happened to me a couple times in Specs, and I don't know why I let it happen the second time, but the first time I'm standing in the little baby Specs at on Memorial. It's tiny. It's slightly bigger than this room.
Sure.
And for a retail store, it's pretty small, of course. But I'm standing in there. I happen to be chatting with the guy about whiskey, and he's like, "Oh, what do you do?" And I was talking about my podcast. That's like me and my partner on the podcast. He's like, "Well, who's your partner?" Right as your voice comes through the speakers, I was like, "It's actually that guy."
Yeah.
And you can see this guy look at me and go, "What?" I said, "That guy that you hear right there. That guy." And you can see him just kind of go, "Okay, sure, Mr. Yeah. Crazy Dude." This happened
hey,
twice to me.
Todd,
is
what's
it
up,
Christmas?
Buddy?
Wow. I see a box so of much. Box of goodies has arrived.
Appreciate it. Yes. It's like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. This is why
your show has
thanks, man.
Has taken off, because when our show, when we get a surprise, well, when you bring in a surprise, it's a box with more really cool bottles. When a surprise happens on our show, it's usually Alan Denny pod crashing.
Yeah,
so, coming in to drink our whiskey.
Yeah, right. So
actually,
you know,
he always brings something.
For those who aren't sure, Alan Denny is a very good, very good, very close friend of all of ours that we absolutely hate with a passion.
Yes.
I did want to say I wanted to apologize on camera because Alan Denny is the type of person that you could be late.
I think he's apologizing for Alan Denny.
Well, that would be a first. Is the type of person that you can be late twice, and then in his mind, you're the guy that's always
late.
That's
always late, right.
And today I was late, and I'm the whole time I'm thinking, please don't tell Alan Denny. I'm getting ahead of it, right?
Yeah.
So essentially, I'm winding up my career in aviation and plan to be done with that in 4 weeks. Just waiting to hit my 10-year anniversary, which is March 11th, and I'm on my last rotation of night shift, so I've been up since 2 p.m. yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And ouch. I will be up until at least 8 p.m. tonight.
And we started with the Sagamore.
And, I had two energy drinks on the way up, but I left the house without a bag full of booze.
Oh, okay.
So I called Whiskey Todd over there, and he was like, "I got you, man." And he drove from the east side of Houston. So we've got some things to taste. There is one thing I really wanted to taste, John, that I didn't bring, and I'm kicking myself for it, and that's Waterford Irish Single Malt Whiskey.
Well, just for what it's worth, for Waterford Single Malt Irish Whiskey, we would be so happy to have you as a guest on Smoking and Toasting, and you can bring it then.
Is
sure,
that?
I can bring it next, yeah, I mean, whenever you guys want
me. I mean,
me.
Don't get me wrong, you can be a guest even if you don't bring anything, but if that's in your hand, I'll we got Mark Burrell next week. I'll bump him.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. I'm the opposite of the backup.
That's right.
I'm the guy that bumps people.
Well, we do refer to you on our show on Smoking and Toasting. We refer to you as our official whiskey expert.
Yeah.
We weren't the first to call you that.
No.
But it has
Texas
it
Monthly.
Has certainly worked out.
Texas
it?
Monthly Magazine.
We have a whiskey expert. We have a wine expert. We have a tequila expert. But
to be fair, you guys were calling Wade a whiskey expert, and all he does is argue with people online.
Well,
what do you do?
But also, to
I
be
educate.
Fair,
oh.
But also, to be fair, you're the guy who hooked us up with Wade. So yeah, there is that.
Yeah, we there's a we're doing a whiskey 101 class at the end of the month at Gulf Coast Distillery, and it's going to be a bit more involved than whiskey 101. And they they're about to announce it, and they had listed their master distiller Julian and whiskey expert Chris Hart. I was like, let's change that. Say whiskey educator that's good. Host of ESPN's Whiskey. Well, whiskey expert's going to get some eye rolls. You know, it's even if I might. I mean, I've my WSET certification, so I am somewhat knowledgeable. But this is the one hobby where you just can't say that without someone wanting
without
to
somebody
roll
wanting
their
to take
eyes.
Well, we have a lot of fun with it. So
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I don't want to like gloss over something.
Yeah,
you're basically stepping away from aviation. You said in a few weeks.
Oh yeah,
and you're going to be, I guess, doing this. You know, the Houston Whiskey Social and the Houston Bourbon Society and the show. This will be your full-time gig.
Well, the Bourbon Society, although is a full-time gig, is not a revenue earner.
No, I get it. But, I mean, I'm just saying you're going to be focused on this without having to go in and, you know, sit at the desk in the office all the time.
So I think the last time I was on your show, I brought in our rums, my rums. Mm-hmm. Today I brought my bourbon. So I will be doing that full-time, the Houston Whiskey Social, the Houston Agave Social. We're doing Mexican spirits.
Awesome.
Tequilas.
Tequilas.
I know
Mezcals,
you're excited.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see you go.
Very excited.
So we will be doing that full-time,
That's awesome. I was in Specs and saw one of your spirits. It was over near the Japanese whiskey, but was it Indian whiskey?
Tell me about that. So that's Amroot. So Waterford Irish Whiskey, the importer, the company here in the U.S. that handles that brand, handles Amroot, they handle Blackadder, they handle Waterford. We convinced them to give me a barrel, and it was a massive hit. It did so well. And typically speaking, their limited edition releases are like 100 proof and $120, and they swapped it. It was 120 proof at $100.
Wow.
Couldn't have been a better deal, right? So we did that. I think it's around 400 or 500 bottles, something like that, statewide. So it's in Austin, it's in Dallas. If you're out traveling the state of Texas, you might see Whiskey Neat's Amroot on the shelf.
That's so cool. I was it was a similar thing. I was looking at their, you know, the case that they keep locked at the end of the counter. So I was looking in there to see if they had my Reserva de la Familia
tequila.
Tequila. And I'm scanning. I'm looking. Oh, I don't see it. Hey, there's Gregarious Grump.
Yeah.
So you made it into the locked case, my friend.
I did. That either means it gets stolen a lot or I don't know. Maybe it's a sales trick to make you think it's more limited than it is.
I was impressed, though.
It's been fun.
Perceived importance.
We're working on some cognac. We're working on the next round of barrels. I even found some 17, 18, and 19-year-old Mount Gay rum. A lot of older rums that should be $150 to $200, closer to $100, $120, somewhere in there. So we've got some more things in the works. We're working on some Jamaican rum.
Ooh.
Speaking of which, let's jump ahead. I brought you guys each a bottle. You guys know our friend Greg Doxakis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Of our plantation rum that we did with them.
Oh.
That is our Houston Bourbon Society single barrel selection plantation rum. I know you guys enjoy rum.
And we're big plantation fans.
Big plantation fans.
Ian, if you'd like me to hold onto your bottle and bring it to the show.
I've learned the folly of that. I've learned that Greg dropped off a bottle of the
it was the Isle of Fiji. Yeah.
And
The only time I actually
got to taste it is when we went and actually hung out with Greg.
Yeah. It never made it to the show.
Yeah. Well,
he never told me about it either.
It's 9 years old. I believe that's a blend of Barbados and Jamaica.
Both two of my favorite rum locales.
Two of my favorite locales, period.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Good point. But the fact that they're so strong in the Rem world is it doesn't hurt either one of them. No, but this is great. So it's a blend of Barbados and Jamaica.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So what they did is they filled the barrel, and I'll read you the official description here. So they filled the barrel, a blend of Barbados and Jamaica, 9 years old, in West Indies, from West Indies Rum Distillery in Long Pond. And then 1 year in Ferran Acacia casks, which spent four and a half years in Barbados, 7.5 years in Jamaica, 3.5 years in in Europe, it's been another 3.5 years and 6 months. Yeah, so it's
well traveled.
It's well traveled, very convoluted, confusing breakdown, but and then what we did is we tasted through some samples and picked out our single barrel that we like so much, and that was it. So,
well, I got to tell you, it's an awesome gift, and I'm feeling a little self-conscious because I think the last time you were on, we gave you a bottle opener. So,
I don't think I got a bottle opener.
Oh, you don't have a bottle?
You guys didn't even do that.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. All right,
I'm just giving you a hard time.
I'll bring the one out of my kitchen drawer.
Day ever. I actually have one in the car. I think.
Okay, good.
Well, this is as you guys know.
This is awesome.
Your show, Smoking and Toasting, also available on iTunes, all your podcasting platforms. You guys are all about fine beer. Was it fine? I always forget the tagline.
It's a craft beer. Craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. That's right. The way it actually goes.
That's right. Speaking of hand-rolled cigars, I don't know what kind of time schedule you're on. I know we kind of discussed maybe doing lunch right after this.
Yeah.
I do have some I believe it's H. Upman Cuban.
Oh.
Cuban, that perfect 52-inch, or that 52 uh-huh. ring gauge, mm-hmm. about 6.5 inches long, torpedoes.
It's a big deal to hang out with Chris.
I just spit all over myself. Cuban cigars are something that they're a bit overrated at times.
I think that's right.
Because they're illegal. I agree. But you can't go wrong with those classic brands like Partagas or H. Upman or Hoya de Monterey.
There is a very specific earthiness that a Cuban cigar has.
Yeah.
If you guys have time, I've got cigar, I've got booze. We can go find an outdoor patio, have some lunch.
You're such a gracious host.
I
don't know how to say no to that.
I just couldn't be a bigger fan of you guys, and we don't get to hang out enough. It's probably been 6 months since we've really hung out.
It has been, yeah.
So what's going on in the world? What's going on with Smoking and Toasting? Where are you guys at? What's going on in your worlds?
What is going on? Well, a couple of things. We have... We managed to make it through, the time where we were doing the show over Skype.
Yeah, the remote show was not a great thing.
It wasn't a great experience, I think. I mean, we had some good shows, but you just can't count on everybody's internet that's connected.
That's the learning curve.
Us, the producer, the
everyone's
got to
be wired.
Everybody's got to be wired, and it's just without it, it's just really difficult. So we figured out, we can space out in the studio, and we'll be okay. And so that's what we did, and we're able to get back into the studio. And so making it through that, I thought was a pretty big deal. And then we had an opportunity come up that we're exploring, and it's not a done deal yet, but we're talking about making the show available as a syndicated program for broadcast radio.
Oh.
So that we take basically what we do every week, and it would be made available to stations that, you know, I mean, Cigar Dave's cool and all, but, you know, he's like 90, I think. And look, I'm not bagging on old people. I'm getting there myself. But you know what I'm saying? Like that show's been around for a long time, and it's just about cigars. And our show is kind of about, you know, these good life things. So we think there seems to be some interest, and people have been talking to us about it. So we're trying to teach ourselves how to do, how to work inside time constraints and stuff.
There's a learning curve.
Which we haven't had to do as a podcast,
There's a learning curve, especially for me, to keep it within, like, we start talking now, we stop talking now, and then we take a break and we go back because we've got to leave room for the commercials and, you know, things like that. So, but it's been fun and interesting. And actually, the way we've got it set up has a really nice flow now, too. So it feels more comfortable than what we were trying to do before.
And yeah,
that we the funny thing is our show before was we always said it was, you know, supposed to be an hour, and it never, I mean, it was sometimes 2 hours, sometimes it was an hour and a half. And now we decided our show is 2 hours long, and
but not a full 2 hours.
But not
it
a full
would be 2 hours straight, right? With commercials, basically. So we do.
But the flow is much better.
Yeah,
it's one of those things. I've always liked the Rogan method.
Yeah,
you know where
the
it's free just,
flowing.
It's a free flowing. It lasts as long as it lasts. You just enjoy yourself. I've always liked that, but I can understand the, especially for radio or syndication, it could be a bit difficult to. You know, to make it work. You guys have been doing this for 3 years now, or 4 years.
I am really bad about telling amounts of time, but I think that's right.
Yeah.
But I know we've done over 220 shows now. This week's show will be 221.
Yeah, so that's 4.5 years.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys are coming in on 5. I've been doing it. We're about to hit 3.
That's crazy. And that's awesome, though.
It flies by so fast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And every time I like look at the calendar, it's like, oh, tomorrow's the show. You know, it's like, and another one.
It
you
happens
know?
Quick.
Yeah, it does.
This whiskey is delicious.
Yeah. What are we drinking here?
Yeah. So this is the Prideful Goat. This is part of my leaving
to Tom Brady.
Leaving whiskey. My day job. it's a 15-year-old Kentucky bourbon, cash strength. And we basically, it's a blend of, I think, 4 or 5 barrels. And people just taste. We had invited some people to come taste some
wonderful
samples. And
so this is really interesting to me because I think what came first for you was the Bourbon Society.
The social.
It was the social before the
social is before Society? Everything. Yeah.
Okay. So the social first.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people think the Facebook group started.
Right.
No, we were
that would have been my guess, but yeah. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Well, so you did the social, and then you grew the Facebook group, and now you've made this transition into actually the world of spirits itself. I mean, not just your show and talking about them here, but you're sampling things, you're pulling things together and releasing them in these cool limited quantities for sale in at least regionally. I don't know how far your reach goes, but I mean, that's crazy. It's
yeah,
awesome.
It's mm-hmm. Texas now. We have plans to go into some other states this year, and I'd like to bottle some Sotol and Mezcal,
mm-hmm.
but you have to be a bit more careful about that in terms of appropriation and branding.
Right.
And so we want to basically bottle, we don't want to be limited by just one thing. We started with rum, but it was never meant to just be rum. It was always mm-hmm. meant to bottle spirits to help, you know, to do in conjunction with the event. But as the event's been put on hold and the world's on fire, we released them anyways. So it's just kind of like most things, they just evolve from one thing into another kind of unexpectedly. And then you just like, oh, you just kind of pivot as things happen. And so we're right now, I think this year we'll definitely be doing more goat, younger goat, cognac, more rum, and then eventually get into Sotol, Mezcal, tequila. I don't know if we'll do tequila, but we'll be hitting some Mexican-based spirits.
Tequila's a tough one because it's so, you know, so limited where it comes from, and the market is very saturated right now for tequilas. You're absolutely right.
Did you guys ever try the Rocks tequila?
No.
No?
No. Read about it. Haven't tried it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? What did you think?
So I'll say this about it. And I've tried to get him on the show a bunch.
It was great. Yeah. Oh my God, The Rock.
No, it's not great tequila. It's bar tequila.
Right.
I think it's perfect for a bar. It's perfect in large mm-hmm. quantities, in the same way that Maker's Mark is, or
right.
You know, it's a
safe choice at the bar
it's
when
a
you
safe choice.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be honest, I don't sip. I haven't sipped Teremana. I've only used it in things. And I thought it makes a great mark. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I prefer Fortaleza or some other things. But, yeah, I don't think we'll touch tequila anytime soon. But, I mean, things are developing nicely.
So it's just very impressive. I mean, you've been able to step into this world that's clearly something that you're such a fan of and enjoy. And it's sort of given you this awesome landing pad after you're stepping away from your other work.
It didn't start out that way. Yeah.
Oh no, I get it. I totally get it. Yeah, it never does. By the way,
speaking of which, I still, you know, it's been a year now. I think the first time I made the recommendation that you guys do some beer projects.
Yes, and we haven't done. Of course, pandemic turned everything sideways. But yeah, that's something we'd love to do. I'll tell you.
I think that's how it starts, right? Like you just try to see what projects you can do, and then you decide I'd rather do it myself, and you know.
Well, you're right about tenure. I was asked just yesterday by somebody, you know, what's the secret to a successful podcast? And my answer was keep doing it.
Yeah.
Because you know when we first started, I mean, you were you know connected with ESPN, so you had a little shorter on-ramp. When we first started, there must have been 10 people listened to our first show.
Maybe.
You know? But over time, if what you're doing is something that you're enjoying doing, people will get a feel for that and will latch onto it. And that's – but you have to keep doing it. Most – your show's different, obviously, with the radio connection, but most podcasts don't make episode 20.
No. Yeah. Well, I've said this before. I want to say a couple things after what you just said. And I feel like someone had to have said this before, but I can't think of anyone who said it, so I'm going to say that I coined it.
Right? Okay, good.
All right. So the only difference between a poor man with a good idea and a rich man with a good idea is follow through.
Right.
I've had several people reach out about podcasts. I wouldn't say that our podcast is, you know, this massive beast compared to, you know, some comedian podcast. Nothing like
Those
Rogan.
Guys are like, yeah,
different galaxy altogether. But I would say that the consistency is key. You got to do it every week. Mm-hmm. And even we've struggled with that, especially during COVID. A couple last minute guest cancellations due to positive tests or whatever.
Right.
Which we try to build a few up in the can. That way, if something does happen, we can slot it in. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But one of the things it also helps if you have someone who knows what they're doing behind the scenes. So ESPN, and this is something we're 3 years in and just realized this grave mistake. When this whole thing started, it was paramount that I own the show, that all the money funneled through me, because I didn't want any conflicts of interest that would cause a vendor to not come to the Whiskey Social.
Right, right, right.
So they pay me, I pay ESPN. And so they edit the show, they film the show, then they send me the files. I upload them to the podcast platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what I was doing. So for the first 3 years, I was uploading to the website, mywhiskeyneed.com, to Apple Podcast through Audio Boom, but not Google Podcasts.
Mm.
And so I've just now, like last week, corrected the RSS feed with Google, which is not an easy thing to do. Google's very hard to get into contact with anybody. And our numbers doubled immediately.
Just by people being able to pick it up on...
Well, it was showing up on...
Google Play?
On Google Play, but it was doing it through our website's RSS feed, not our Audio Boom RSS feed.
Got it. Yeah.
So the metrics we were getting from Audio Boom didn't include Google Podcast. And those are our metrics we use for sales.
Right.
So to advertisers and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. As soon as they corrected the feed and Audio Boom was getting Google Play, their podcasting numbers, our numbers doubled almost.
Right. That makes sense.
And I'm like, 3 years? It took me 3 years to, like, so I don't even know what I'm doing.
Well, this is all uncharted territory. I mean, I started doing podcasts back in the very beginning. I was one of the first, I'm going to say, 15 or 20 music podcasts that existed in the world back in the extremely early days when they called it a podcast because in order to listen to it, you had to set your iTunes or a podcast aggregator up to get the new episode when it posted.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you synced your iPod, Remember syncing your iPod, plugging the cable in? When you synced your iPod, it would send the new episode
download,
to your... That's why it was called a podcast in the first place, is because the way people would listen to them was on their iPods.
Right.
And, of course, that whole thing has exploded. But there's still so much I don't know about it, even having been involved in it that long.
Yeah, it's similar to this whole bottling spirits thing. Like, I know what I want the label to say. I know it'll work. I know won't be written off as some bullshit story about this or that. And I know what looks good, but I rely heavily on the digital artists and the label company and the distillery. I rely on them to bring the diarrhea that spews out of my mouth to life, right? So I get to claim this as this is mine. I designed this with.
They did a great job with the Prideful Goat.
Well, Randall Sullivan. So the Prideful Goat is my project, but I'm doing the Prideful Goat directly with Randall Sullivan and Gulf Coast Distilleries. Gregarious Grump is just between me and Gulf Coast Distillers, but me and Randall. I mean, we went back and forth on label design over and over and over and over again, and we knew what would work, but we don't – this is why people need producers and, you know, and you've got a great team behind you guys over at Smokin' and Toastin', and if I was doing this myself, I wouldn't have made it to Podcast 20.
Oh, I hear you. I understand completely.
And now I think we're at almost 150, so we're 100 episodes behind you guys.
Halfway to 200.
There you go.
That's right. Hey, everybody. I want to take a quick moment, take a pause in the show, and talk to you a little bit about Waterford Irish Single Malt Whiskey. This is an exceptional, different farm-to-glass, grain-to-glass, single-farm, single-origin Irish whiskey that sets itself apart and does everything it can to prove that terroir in whiskey is a real thing. You can check it out at glassrev.com/Waterford today. Cheers. Yeah, I forget where we were at, but Randall Sullivan. So Randall is, I call him my vanilla gorilla. He might kill me for getting his height wrong, but I'm going to say 6 foot, about 6 foot tall. Huge, massive gorilla Johnny Bravo looking son of a bitch, right? And he does his podcast all by himself, films, edits, the whole nine yards. I have it in me, I think, if I had the bandwidth for it, but I don't. I don't. And I thank Brandon, I thank Jack every week for bringing the show to life. And you guys have, I mean, you're wheels of steel, right? I mean, your son-in-law
Adam
is
on the wheels of steel.
Adam is doing it live, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah. I lost my train of thought what we were talking about before.
Well, I'll ask you this. Pandemic has obviously wreaked havoc on small breweries.
Yeah.
Have the smaller and more boutique distilleries fared any better than the guys on the beer side?
No, a lot of them are hurting. I think the numbers might have been exaggerated a little bit, as they tend to be whenever we talk about reports, when we talk about past the point of no return for carbon footprint, and the world's going to be 100,000 degrees within 5 years. I think we tend to, whether it's accidental or on purpose, exaggerate a little bit. When it was first reported, I want to say in June or mid-year last year, craft distilleries, there was some estimation around, I think, 65 or 70% of them wouldn't survive this pandemic. As of now, the vast majority of them are still there. Like, it's, I don't think, in fact, the one that's probably hurting the most is here in Houston. It's called KBT. I always forget the abbreviation, but it's out in Katy. And they're having a pretty rough go. But the vast majority of them are still pumping along.
I know with craft beer, I know the biggest thing, you know, people are drinking more during the pandemic.
Can shortage.
But the biggest thing, other than the can shortage, the biggest thing was that so many bars had popped up. So in addition to whatever sales they had on premise at some of the breweries, so many bars had popped up where it was important to be carrying cool local craft brands. And when all those shut down or went to limited capacity, it really hurt the sales.
The keg sales. Yeah.
I would suppose that would have some impact on the distillery side as well? Well, maybe not as much, though.
No, because the so yes and no, depending on the brand, right? So the historical narrative or the historical mindset for large brands has been you're going to move more product on premise. Mm-hmm. And that's true. Buffalo Trace, Blanton's, all the big guys are pumping Four Roses even, right? They're yeah,
Four
Yellow
Roses
Label.
Is on fire.
They're pumping liquid through bars at a rate unheard of up to this point. But now what's happened is people are still going to drink, but they're switching from bar drinking to at-home bottle drinking. Mm-hmm. And so instead of selling it by the glass, they're selling it by the bottle. In much larger quantities, because now that it's sitting right there, why don't I just have a morning drink or an afternoon drink or a late night drink? So a
it's
lot
5 o'clock somewhere.
A lot of distributors laid off a lot of their on-premise reps, but their off-premise reps in liquor stores have seen a massive surge.
Well, I know when we've talked to some of the guys from the smaller distilleries and smaller craft breweries, one of the things they're missing in a huge way is the ability to go in and sample in the stores, which there's still some of, but I think it's just not as not as big a deal. Because that can mean huge sales for somebody that's got, you know, a good tasting product. People come by, sample it, and you know, sell a couple of cases.
I think another thing that's been hurting them in particular is them selling bottles out of their own shop.
Yeah.
So what a lot of people don't realize, let's say my bottle cost, I'm going to use some very vague round numbers here.
Okay.
But let's say a distillery bottles a product. Now, on the shelf at a liquor store, that bottle is $100.
Okay.
But they don't sell it to the distributor for $100. Let's say they sell it to the distributor for $45.
Mm-hmm.
The distributor is going to work off of vague round numbers, add 30% of that to the store. So if it's $45 here, it's now whatever 45 plus 30% of that is to a store. The store is also going to add 25 to 30% markup to get it to the $100 mark. Right. So for a distillery, they get to sell a bottle that would go for a liquor store at $100 that they would normally only make $45 on. So the on-premise sales, which are limited to 2 per person per 30 days in Texas, is a massive paycheck for them.
Right. Because if they sell it anywhere close to what it costs you in the store, they're making a much larger profit than they would off of a bottle sold to a distributor.
And they should. Good for them. It's kind of a travesty when you think about it that the money maker in most situations is never the people who make it.
Oh, yeah. But that's true in everything, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct. Cigars,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Cigars is 100% markup at each level, right? So if it costs, if I want to make a cigar and it costs me $1 to $2, it's going to be $4 getting it imported in the store, another $4, another, so it'll double in price at each tier for cigars. And then now you got an $8 stick. That brick and mortar cigar shop is getting $4 for that stick. I only got $2 for that stick.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you, when Ian and I were invited to Honduras, to the Aladino cigar fields and factory, the farm, one of the things that kind of blew our mind after we physically saw all the steps that a cigar goes through, from seed to soil to plant to cutting to, you know, rolling and all the different things that it goes through before it finally winds up in a box. I can't believe you can make a cigar for $8.
Yeah,
you know, never mind two, you know.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know how they do it. So, but yes, you're right. It's the middleman. You know, this country and the whole structure of capitalism really is kind of built on the whole middleman philosophy.
And by the way, if you tell any brick and mortar stores or liquor stores or any of those people that they're the ones making more money, they get their panties in a wad.
Yes, they get absolutely
furious. So upset. And I'm like, well, hold on. Listen, it's very simple math. I'm not saying your margins are better, but you just mentioned in a tobacco plantation, hundreds of acres of land.
Workers.
Yeah. Fumigation,
yeah,
that arguably costs more than a liquor store. Now, obviously, it's spread out per stick a little bit differently.
Sure, but you're absolutely right.
But all I'm saying is that they only make $1 per stick, and your markup is double when it gets to you.
Yeah, sure.
And it's the same thing with liquor. I mean, don't get me wrong. This is a $120 bottle. 113 plus tax, $120. This company, Blackadder, is not making
$100 off that.
Yeah,
box.
No, yeah. No. And distribution and importation, they're making the bigger money. So, no, that's not to say that's unfair in nature, but it is the truth of the matter is that it's our entire society, our structure is built off that. There's levels, importation, distribution. I mean, they've all got to get their cut too. So I get it, but. Yeah, again, I lost my train of thought. I don't know what we were talking about before.
Well, just distilleries that were trying to make it through the pandemic.
And how difficult it was, so I think. Texas, they lost all their on-premise sales is what they've done. Mm-hmm. But because people aren't going to distilleries, they're still a lot of them, I know in particular Whitmire's here in Houston, has made quite a bit of money selling to liquor stores. So they're mm-hmm. It's part of the process. All right, so I did bring in something else. I know we've hit rye, we've hit bourbon. I gave you your rum. This is Blackadder Peat Reek Raw Cask. I don't know if you've ever had one of these.
I have not. Have you?
But they leave the barrel char in the bottle. It looks like a little snow globe. So you might have some black flakes in the bottle. I've always loved opening these.
Yeah.
I'm such a huge fan. I call them tea leaves.
Ian's going to love it because he is Mr. Chunky Beer. So.
He likes
to chew his beer. So.
I meant to ask you about that because you guys have mm-hmm. had Urban South on, right?
Yes.
What do you? What is your assessment of these fruit puree beers? You happy with them?
You know, I really liked what he brought on the show.
Do you like smoothies?
Yeah.
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 But I will say that of late, I've noticed that when I go into my beer fridge and I'm in the mood for, you know, like a beer. I usually have a beer while I'm washing the dishes late at night. That's my like sort of private beer time. So I'll go to my little beer fridge, and I've noticed that I keep going past the couple of sours and smoothie type beers that I have in there, and that I'm going for, you know, maybe a hazy IPA or maybe a pilsner or a porter or something like that, depending on what mood I'm in. But I've just noticed that the sours and the
fruit purees
are kind of sitting there longer.
So
it's just an observation. It could just be I'm going through a phase where
not in the mood for
them. I'm not in the mood for them. Yeah,
I love sour beers, so they don't last long at my house, even remotely. And I only have one other friend that likes sour beers as much as I do. So those go pretty quick. I reach for an IPA about. One in every 15, maybe.
Well, you're more of a barrel-aged guy in my book.
I do like, I love porters, and I love Belgian, and I love that whole side of it, which is the opposite of IPA almost. I love fruity beers, but I don't really reach for like the puree kind of things. Those are like I'll share one mm-hmm. with a friend right, or something right. like that. But they're good and they're fun. A lot of times.
I'm looking for the dates here because I want to talk to you about something here. So, let's see. My events.
This smells amazing.
It doesn't smell so good. So bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, while you're finding that, let me just mention, you just took me back to like being like 15 years old in Boy Scouts.
Oh, my God.
And standing over the campfire as we're like putting it out and getting ready to leave for the day. That's what this reminds me of.
You know, you get a little dirt in your food. We just called that Boy Scout seasoning.
Yeah, that's right. But it's so smoky.
So smoky and vegetal, yeah.
I mean, and of course, Pete is going to be that way, but Peat Reek is a good name for this because it's definitely stronger in the peat category than most.
I'm such a massive fan of Blackadder. They don't sponsor the show per se. Their importer, Glass Rev Imports, they do sponsor the show. So this is an unsolicited plug for one of my favorite and most fun whiskeys.
Is the
raw cask, unfiltered Isla single malt Scotch whiskey, 120 proof. And oh my God, it's so beautiful. So February 21st, you being a barrel aged guy, Copperhead Brewery, HBS is releasing mm-hmm. their project that we did with Copperhead. Now, Copperhead's known as arguably one of the most masters of barrel aged beers. They're very well respected. If you were to talk to like the top 100 beer geeks in Houston, and you were to list the, ask them, top five barrel-aged beers in Texas, breweries in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I would wager that a lot of them, if not the majority of them, would at least put Copperhead in their top five. It's based out of Conroe.
Mm-hmm.
They do something called King of Terrors. King of Terrors is everything they do is very heavy metal-esque, mm-hmm. right? And King of Terrors is usually the barrel-aged stout, usually in whiskey barrels. This is their King of Taters. Tater being an affectionate term for a whiskey,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. whiskey dork.
Right. Wait.
Peanut butter barrel aged in Jack Daniel's barrels. Peanut butter stout. So, February 21st, 2 p.m. at the distillery brewery. Sorry, force of habit. At the brewery, Copperhead Brewery on Fraser Street. If you go to Eventbrite, check it out. It's on Facebook. There's a Facebook event for it. Peanut butter barrel aged stout. Imperial stout, 10% ABV. I will be there all day. We'll be outdoors. We'll have cigars. I encourage you to come. And
that's on a Sunday.
It's on a Sunday.
So have you tasted it yet?
Or is no.
This, oh, so this will be
no, no.
Be
so the idea was mine. The execution, like everything else, is someone else.
Yeah.
Right? So if it's good, it's not my credit.
Yeah.
Well, right. But I'm going to take credit. But it's not my credit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was my idea to do. We did something a couple years ago called Nice Guy Eddie Coconut Barrel Aged Stout. That was mm-hmm. a big success. Very well liked. A little thin, but great. And we
we tried that.
We talked about doing a competition. Who can do the better coconut barrel aged stout? And we just decided not to talk shit to another brewery. So we just did a peanut butter barrel aged stout, which I love peanut butter stout. So
yeah,
Belching Beaver makes a fantastic one that I'm a big fan of. So if you like the fruit stuff and you like the barrel aged stuff, it might be worth coming. If you guys can put on your calendars, I'd love to share a smoke with you.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. Where can people find you? Give me the spiel. Of where the great Smoking and Toasting guys are at?
Wherever great podcasts are sold. No, you can find us on Google.
And if you order now.
Yeah. How much would you pay? you can find us on all the usual places, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. If you're a YouTube browser, I call it the YouTube Rabbit Hole channel.
Sure.
We do post all of the shows on YouTube, but what's interesting is that Adam, our producer on the Wheels of Steel, has a tendency to go into the shows and he'll take out just a segment. So he'll take out a segment where, let's say, we're tasting Blackadder Peat Reek, and he'll post that, and maybe that's 10 minutes long or 8
like
minutes long.
Like little clips of stuff.
Little clips from the show. Joe Rogan and a lot of other successful podcasts do that. But I wanted to mention that because, you know, the show's, you know, an hour and 40 minutes long, generally speaking, and that can be a little daunting to sit down and watch on YouTube, mm-hmm. you know? Now, you may spend an hour and 40 minutes on YouTube, but you'll probably watch a whole bunch of different stuff instead of one thing. So these little clips are a lot of fun, and they're a good way to, you know, that pulls something out of
the episode
of the show. And yeah.
It is nice, though, if you're having a romantic evening, to put us on in the background, put on the whole show, right. And then lower the lighting a little bit and mm-hmm. have your... You know, nice romantic.
Yeah, a lot of people have changed up from, say, you know, old Barry White albums to just putting on Smoking
It. Your voice. Yeah. Yeah. The
I mean, I do
nothing gets
the time.
My motor going like the voice from the guy from Specs.
I'm telling you.
Well played.
It works. It works. Oh, man. Well I've got
no, but thank you. We're we're very excited. And we do the show live every Thursday at 1 p.m. Central Time on Facebook Live. And we as we like to say, at one-ish sharp.
Yes, it's a soft one.
Yeah, but generally we're on within a moment or two of 1 o'clock.
About 1 o'clock, yeah. Well, you have to have me back on. I've lost complete track of my competition with the great Alan Denny. He's definitely in the lead by at least double at this point. But next time you guys have some availability, I'd love to bring...
Well, we'll set it up.
We'll come talk Waterford, get some Irish whiskey in front
of
you.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Awesome.
But it's also just fun to have you on. Now, one of the things I will mention we're planning, and I've got to go out and basically fund this by buying a whole bunch of stuff. But we're going to do a, because it's become such a trend in the spirit and liquor world, we're going to do a hard seltzer blind taste test.
I mean,
very soon. You want to come in for that?
Yeah, you know, there is something that you bring that up, I'd like to test with you guys. I might have already mentioned it to you, but there's been a big hot debate in the beer world because snobbery abounds. Right? Snobbery abounds.
Oh, of course.
No way.
I mean, that, what's that movie? The Dude Abides.
Right.
Snobbery abounds. And there is a hard, firm belief of how you should pour your beer.
Oh, yes. You're a hard pour guy.
Not always, but yes.
Yeah.
I do hard pour. And I have talked to brewers. I know the process of carbonating a beer before a can. And a lot of it is with a generous margin. And I have, in my private life, blind taste tested a hard pour versus a soft pour, a proper pour. We'll say hard pour versus proper pour. And if you drink it as soon as I do it blind, you're not going to know the difference.
Interesting.
And so the snobbery of being upset by a hard pour is bullshit. So then
I'll turn the question around then. What would be the advantage to the hard pour?
To alleviate any amount of carbonation you can if you have a problem with carbonation. Like last week we had a guy on, Daniel Whittington. And I know that's kind of made fun of too. It's like that Bill Burr joke. Bill Burr used to say that he would, you know, guys are the worst, right? You can't even, it's raining outside. You can't even go get an umbrella because your friends will be like, oh, you need an umbrella. You're fancy. So there's a running joke of like on the bloated thing, like making fun of people who hard pour because it's a bloating thing. Like, oh, you bloated, you wussy, you know? So Daniel Whittington, who was on last week with Rex, they had talked about the fact that he can't do beer at all. He just avoids it, period. And as I've gotten older, I find me burping more when I drink, which is fine. You burp, you relieve the pressure. I get it. But I just don't think it matters as much as people think it does. It's like the whole storing wine on your side. This was disproven years ago, but it still persists. All wine, anytime you have a $1 million mansion and they build you a wine rack, they build it so the wine is laying on its side, so the cork doesn't dry out. Well, the humidity in the headspace of a wine bottle or a whiskey bottle is 100%. It's not going to dry out.
Right.
And the belief that it is bullshit. It's not based on anything.
And yet people have built wine racks and wine
and people continue to do it, right? So it was completely disproven. And I think the same goes for beer. I think there's things that have been tied. You know, I've looked at the pre-Cicerone exam, and I want to take it just so I can say I've taken the exam and I disagree with this idea.
Right.
Because I don't feel like – it's kind of like I have a college degree in biochemistry so I can speak out against my thoughts on the pandemic. But if you don't have a college degree, people are like, oh, this old – Google guy over here just Googles, he knows everything, right? Like, so I feel like if I got a Cicerone certification, that when I do have the conversation, that I'll be like, hey, no, I do know what I'm talking about. But I don't think even two of the biggest beer guys I know, if I were to hard pour, the foam would settle within a minute. It settles. I don't think you guys would know the difference.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. Yeah, but both of y'all are disagreeing vehemently, quietly.
And what's to stop you from, like, once you hard pour it, to just putting some ice in that beer and then dropping a straw in it?
Wait, what?
I mean, you're already doing it wrong.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You might as well drop some ice in it, put a straw in your beer, and maybe even a little umbrella, because you need an umbrella.
What I love about
this. See how I made the circle there?
I see.
What I love about this whole thing, though, is how heavily felt his conviction is. Because he's been talking about this for a year.
Last time he was...
It's been 2 years.
Last time he was on our show when we did one at one of those cigar shops. Yeah, one of the cigar shops, he was talking about it. And he was very defensive about it because he was pouring his beer. And he was like, okay, guys, let me go ahead and tell you.
Well, yeah, I don't remember this.
You should know you've become synonymous because any time that On the show.
True.
If Ian's pouring the beers and he pours them like a too little hard? Faster and that's get a little Chris extra foam,
you guys make
Chris Hart style. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Yeah.
You get name checked on the show all the time.
So I
do want to tell you, though, that the proper way to pour Guinness from a Guinness draft from the can is Chris Hart style.
Yeah, yeah. So why is that? And I know the answer to that already.
Because of the nitro?
No, I guess I don't.
Because it activates the nitro would be my.
No, when you pop the can, right? When you pop the can, it activates the nitro. But what happens is it settles.
Okay.
And if you pour it just into it, you get so much head, Chris Hart style, that you can't actually pour more beer in there. But if you let it settle as it pours, then you can actually get the right amount of beer in.
So I did talk to a guy I know that got started in brewing, a guy named Jared Hempstead. His career start was in brewing. Yeah. and he also, and this was in Waco, and there may have been some edibles involved, but he was like, he reassured me that there's this prevailing, there are a lot of things in this hobby, the type of glassware you use, mm-hmm. how things are poured, the way you should because of this reason and that mm-hmm. reason. Mm-hmm. Like there's different shaped beer glass depending on the type of beer. And I'm not claiming to be a whiskey expert. I'm not claiming to be a super taster. I can tell quite a bit blind, and have recently won a Wade blind where I was able to identify things out of 17 or 21 samples or something like that. I'm very confident in that if I can't tell a difference, I'm willing to bet it's negligible. Not that I'm necessarily saying that you can't if I can't. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's pretty damn negligible. I think we tend to – and this was covered last week's episode too. We tie our identity to our knowledge on the hobby we're so passionate about. Yeah,
that's true.
And because of that, when we take something more seriously than someone else, we're like, this fucking idiot.
Right.
You know, like we're so quick to write off that person.
Well, and that's a good point because, you know, I spent a big part of my career in radio, and the latter part of my career, I spent quite a bit of it in alternative music radio. And there's a very similar kind of snobbery 100%. And elitism. A band is awesome until other people like them, and then they've
Green
sold
Day.
Out. Right, exactly.
Green Day in the 90s was the shit.
Right.
Dookie was one of the best albums ever released. And then in 2005, they became this emo teenage goth band type thing. And it's like, well, they're no longer cool.
But what you said was...
I didn't think they were cool in the first place.
But, you know, Ian is known
Ian
for,
is so incensed by this conversation. He's not even making eye contact. He's known, he's like, I didn't think it was that great news.
I remember when I told Ian that I went to see... Chevelle. He wouldn't talk to me for 3 weeks.
I love Chevelle.
Yeah, I see, I do too. But anyway, my point is that what you did
flips the table over.
I can't.
What's your
like
stance
this
on Taking Back Sunday? Nickelback. Nickelback.
Buck
Cherry.
You know, my
I oddly like Buck Cherry.
My point is that you're absolutely right. When this is a hobby or an interest that somebody feels very vested in,
correct.
It's so easy to become very opinionated. And I used to say back when I was doing the alternative radio thing, I used to say like what you like.
Yeah,
that's so much cooler than liking or not liking something because of all these other reasons.
People, you know?
And I think it's the same with spirits and with beer. I like my beer cold. You're not. I like my beer colder than you're supposed to drink beer. That's just how I like it. I get more pleasure out of that than I do out of drinking it room temperature or you know.
I believe that's called a fetish.
Yeah, maybe it is. But the point is, if it's what I like, that's how I should do it. And if you like to hard pour your beers, Chris Hart, you should
Chris Hart style.
Totally do that.
So here's my I'll say this. The next time I'm on your show, we're doing this. Let's put it to rest.
All right.
I will.
See, this is really important to him. That's kind of my point.
It's always any chance
it's
I
very
get
about it.
Yes.
Any chance I get to bring a more reasonable sense of reality to somebody, I'm in. These people who live in such a impassioned perspective that right. it's their whole identity, that they're so snobby about everything.
Right, right.
I go fuck yourself.
Maybe so, being snobby is their passion, though. But and then you're taking that away from somebody.
I don't, well, no.
I mean, that's crushing a dream.
I don't think it starts that way, right? I don't think it starts that way. I mean, there's this, and I'm not taking a stance.
Sometimes I just like to be the opposing voice. Sure. By the way. Dookie is a terrible album.
I'm not taking a stance on this, but there is this thought process in music that vinyl just sounds better, right? You've mm-hmm. heard that.
Mm-hmm.
It may not, I don't know, but there's always these prevailing, I wouldn't say old wives' tale, but these narratives that go out there that if you're cool and you're in the know, hey man, you like football? What's your favorite team? Oh, that team's garbage. So you immediately
right, right,
someone
right.
says, "I'm a whiskey." I'll give you a great example. I was at a bar the other day. I knew someone who worked at the bar, and that someone told the waitress, "That's Chris Hart." As much of a douchebag as I sound right now, he's a whiskey guy. She's like, "Oh, I'm a whiskey girl." So she came over to me and was telling me that bourbon had to be made in Kentucky, and that. She's like, "What's your favorite whiskey?" I was like, "I don't really have a favorite. There's a lot of really good ones out there." And she was saying a lot of stuff that I know was not true. And she was being very judgy.
Very emphatic about it. Yeah.
Very emphatic and very wrong in what she mm-hmm. was saying. Jack Daniels isn't bourbon. Just all these different things, right? And I realized in that moment, I now know where she really stands on the whiskey spectrum, if she is educated or uneducated. And she's so impassioned that I'm not going to be the one to
right.
correct her.
It's like,
but if I hard pour my beer and you give me shit for it, so much so that we talk about it 2 years later, I'm willing to put you to the test.
There is something in his past
he's a little broken.
This is what we'll do. I'll grab three beers of various styles.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hard pour them into a cup.
Okay.
Set a couple cups in front of you guys, mm-hmm. and then I'll take the hard pour cup and fill your cup so that the length of foam, if there's any retaining foam, it won't mess all with right. your head. And then a fresh beer into your other cup. And if you can tell me with consistency that you can objectively tell a difference, then I'm willing to concede that it might be more important than I think.
Okay,
that's you fair guys, because I think it's like this. I think you guys think it's this important. I think it's this important. I think there may be a middle ground, but I'm willing to bet there's not.
You know what I really love about this experiment?
What's that?
Free beer.
We're going to be drinking beer.
Yeah,
that's going to be awesome.
All right. So let's make this happen, and maybe we do it the same day we do the seltzers. I'm in.
That's too much for one show.
That's a lot of carbonation. Do you hard pour your seltzers?
I mean, they're seltzers.
Because it's okay.
They're seltzers. It's basically water.
So Ian, it harkened to me, though, the idea of doing this and just – it's going to be awesome.
What's important is seltzers are so new. We don't have a structured way or a glass. We can set those standards now.
You mean it doesn't have the snobbery because it's so new.
That's right.
We should avoid the snobbery.
Well, there's a snobbery against it, I can tell you that.
The
White Claw jokes for it.
Yeah, well, I ordered a T-shirt. I remember when the pandemic first started, one of the first things I ordered online was I was like, I'm going to go support a craft brewery and buy some of their merch. So I went online to Stone Brewing, which I love Stone's IPAs. And so I ordered a Stone Brewing T-shirt. And when it arrived, they had tucked into the package, along with the awesome shirt, they tucked in a few little stickers and coasters. And one of the coasters, that was Stone on one side, and when you flipped it over, it said, and I probably won't quote this exactly right, but it said, "Hard seltzer where a lack of taste and shoddy craftsmanship come together." Gist of it. So I was like, oh, okay, Stone. I mean, Stone's a serious craft brewery. They're throwing down on the hard seltzer thing. Meanwhile, Shiner, which is – I mean, they're no slackers. St. Arnold, they're all doing seltzers.
Yeah.
So seltzer has kept Sam Adams in business for the last 2 years.
Yeah, the bottom line is they have a place in mm-hmm. the drinking spectrum, the type of person that enjoys them, they have a place.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. I think we're so quick to feel our own identities in jeopardy and our own snobberies in jeopardy that we're not even willing to challenge it to learn something from it. We want to keep those in place because it's what we identify with.
We're missing an opportunity to snob this up. We can sit down and have a taste test with seltzer and try it in different glasses, figure out which one is the best glass. And then that will set us up to be able to make fun of people who drink seltzer out of the wrong glass. But that's the whole point.
That being said, we serve beer in cans. And a lot of people drink beer in cans.
And especially with a speed hole is a perfectly acceptable
This idea that it has to be in a glass. I mean, we don't give people shit for drinking out of a can.
Right.
But we do give people for drinking.
We should, but.
Right.
Yeah.
But we are of a bottle, right?
I'm not elitist or anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
But we tie the importance of glass shape to the style of beer. But
more often
than not, you'll drink it out of a glass bottle it came in or a can that it came in. We're not always dumping it into some other vessel.
Yeah.
Get the fuck over.
So left to my own devices, I prefer a can.
Sure.
And I prefer that poured into a glass. I don't always care what glass it is. Like that to me is negligible.
Right.
But
no, then you're not as much of
craft guy on this.
Let me just
I don't hard pour it.
You
into
can't
glass.
You can't give me shit about hard pouring when you're like, I'll put it in a Dixie cup.
But
it's the same level of snobbery.
Let me just try to put a bow on it here.
Okay.
Okay. To drink what you like. Try new things. Go back to what you like. It's the same with music. I am thrilled as a music lover to live in a world where I can't stop listening to the new Steven Wilson album because it's so fucking amazing. But I also will probably listen to Harry Styles' Watermelon Sugar in the car on the way home.
100%.
Because it's an awesome throwaway pop song.
As a father Harry Styles to teenage daughters, I'm with you 100%.
Harry Styles is seltzer. And Steven Wilson is, you know, that cask-conditioned bottle that you've been saving for a long time to share with your friends. I love both of those things. And I love living in a world where we have such great access to that on a musical level and when it comes to spirits and beers and stuff, too. So listen to what you love. Drink what you like. It's a great world out there.
Reasonable stance that I can't disagree with. So just to recap, Cruz is right, Ian is wrong, and we'll see you guys next week.
All right, so we're going to try beer with ice and a straw.
Like, this is how we end our show.
Why don't we drink it that way?
That's the new ending for our show. Cruz is right, Ian is wrong, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
You're giving us a new close. I love it.
All right, guys. Well, listen, thank you guys so much for coming. We'll wrap this up. I'll do an intro real quick, and then we'll go get some lunch and cigars.
Awesome.
So while I'm doing the intro, you want to figure out where we're going that has a place we can smoke?
I don't know what time it is. I've got a call.
Yeah, well, just figure it out. If you can't do it, then don't worry about it. But I've got the cigars if we can.
But that means I would leave you with this guy.
Oh, I love the guy. He can be wrong by himself. All right, guys, I'll see you later. Thanks.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.